pride. Gotta have pride.
Do you know what the Stonewall riots were about?
I've never heard anything about it.
The disorders began with a routine police raid on a homosexual bar.
Gonna be a long, hot summer from now on.
I never have read about it, what exactly happened there, and the purpose of it.
No, I don't know nothing about it.
Are you ready for a story?
Yeah, yeah!
A story of our past.
At last!
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. British civil servants win partner pensions, but lords challenge adoption equality. Schroeder celebrates while Bush backs off Pride Month. Speaking of which, what is a Stonewall, and who was this Christopher Street? The answer to that question and a lot more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 15, 2002. The same-gender partners of gay and lesbian British civil servants will receive the same pension benefits as legally married worker spouses beginning in October. The benefits are one of a number of revisions to Britain's civil service pension scheme. They came as the result of many years of lobbying by unions and a European Union directive against employment discrimination. Meanwhile, Britain's House of Lords this week debated opening adoptions to unmarried couples, including gay and lesbian couples. The government's adoption and children's bill easily passed in the Labour-dominated Parliament, but the opposition Conservative Party is hoping to block it in the Lords.
Italy's parliament this week debated restricting artificial insemination exclusively to heterosexual couples, prohibiting its use for lesbians, women not in relationships with men, and surrogate mothers. The bill would also ban the use of donor sperm and eggs.
In the U.S., Washtenaw County, Michigan's chief judge has barred his colleagues from allowing gays and lesbians and other unmarried partners to co-adopt their partner's children. To enforce the policy, he announced last week, County Chief Judge Archie Brown this week reassigned to himself 9 such applications that Judge Donald Shelton had said he would approve anyway. The American Civil Liberties Union has intervened against Brown's blanket policy, insisting that each case must be judged on its individual merits and questioning Brown's authority and impartiality. Although second-parent adoptions have been granted for at least 7 years by courts in Washtenaw County, which includes Ann Arbor, it's believed that none of Michigan's 82 other counties has done so.
Maryland's highest state court this week unanimously upheld Montgomery County's extension of spousal health benefits to the domestic partners of its unmarried employees. The legal challenge brought by the Religious Rights American Center for Law and Justice has created a precedent favorable to gays and lesbians in Maryland's first high court ruling on the issue.
There will be a new trial for gay Texas inmate Calvin Burdine after nearly 2 decades on death row, Harris County prosecutors said this week. Burdine had to be either freed or retried in accordance with a federal appellate ruling after the U.S. Supreme Court last week declined to take up the state's appeal of Burdine's notorious sleeping lawyer case. Burdine was convicted of killing his former partner in the course of a robbery. In that original trial, prosecutors used Burdine's sexual orientation in a most inflammatory manner without objection from his court-appointed counsel, who himself was heard to use anti-gay slurs. In the course of appeals, Texas did not contest that Burdine's lawyer had been asleep for portions of the trial's proceedings, but maintained that it was up to the defendant to prove the verdict would have been different had the lawyer been awake.
As U.S. Roman Catholic bishops met in Texas this week to develop a policy on priests who molest minors, gay and lesbian groups held a vigil protesting the way some have appeared to scapegoat gays in the course of the growing scandal. But despite some right-wing groups' demands that the bishops act to remove gay priests, that was simply not on the agenda and was not mentioned in the policy adopted at the meeting.
50 demonstrators were arrested this week as they protested the Southern Baptist Convention's anti-gay policies. The group Soul Force, which seeks equal treatment for gays and lesbians by all religious denominations, claims the Southern Baptists are the only ones to refuse even to speak with them. A dozen protesters actually entered the Southern Baptists' annual meeting in St. Louis, disrupting it with shouts against spiritual violence. They were charged with felony trespassing and ethnic intimidation, as the Missouri hate crimes law is known. The others arrested were charged with misdemeanor trespassing in the kind of orderly nonviolent protest that's a Soul Force trademark. About 150 others also demonstrated outside the meeting. Outgoing Southern Baptist President James Merritt responded with a press conference denouncing the media's acceptance of homosexuality.
A move to bring a long-awaited vote on a federal hate crimes bill was blocked in the U.S. Senate this week. The Local Law Enforcement Enhancement Act, known in earlier editions as the Hate Crimes Prevention Act, would add sexual orientation, gender, and disability to federal hate crimes laws, which currently apply only to bias against race, religion, and ethnicity. Republicans, led by Utah Senator Orrin Hatch, were prepared to bury the bill under a mass of amendments, but a so-called cloture vote to stop that process fell 4 votes short. Democratic leader Tom Daschle plans to bring the bill back to the floor later this year.
But the U.S. House of Representatives this week approved a bill named for openly gay New York City Fire Department chaplain Michael Judge. He was one of a small number of public safety officers who died in the September 11th terrorist attacks who left no survivors qualifying for benefits under the current federal law, which recognizes only legally married spouses, children, and parents. The bill provides for a one-time payment of $250,000 to whomever those victims had named as beneficiary on their life insurance policies. Although the Senate gave it unanimous consent, Republican leadership in the House had previously blocked it from a floor vote, with some conservatives objecting to possibly benefiting a gay or lesbian partner. This week, the House passed the bill with a voice vote, sending it on to President George W. Bush, who has yet to indicate a position on it.
The Bush administration has again declined to issue a proclamation of Gay and Lesbian Pride Month. A spokesperson said the president believes every person should be treated with dignity and respect, but he does not believe in politicizing people's sexual orientation. However, Bush has in the last 6 months proclaimed African American History Month, Irish American Heritage Month, Asian Pacific Heritage Month, Women's History Month, and Older Americans Month. The Pride Proclamation request was submitted by GLOBE, an affinity group of lesbi, gay, and trans federal employees. Bill Clinton was the first and only U.S. president ever to issue a Pride Proclamation, doing so in each of his last 3 years in office. His Democratic Party continued its long-standing tradition of a special Pride greeting from its national committee. Under Bush, federal departments have been all over the spectrum on Pride, from no observance to the Commerce Department withdrawing its traditional support for an event to a proclamation of Pride Month from Environmental Protection Agency chief and former New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman to a scheduled speaking appearance by Deputy Attorney General Larry Thompson at the Justice Department's Pride event. Meanwhile, some 200,000 people attended Washington, D.C.'s annual Pride March this week.
In contrast to President Bush, Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder spoke out in advance of this month's Pride events in Germany. The celebrations are known there as Christopher Street Day for the New York City location of the 1969 uprising, recognized as the birth of the contemporary gay and lesbian civil rights movement. In a published statement, Schroeder declared that Christopher Street Day makes our society more colorful, more open, and more tolerant, saying it should be a celebration for all of us.
A scheduled meeting with openly gay Berlin Mayor Klaus Wowereit has won some surprisingly tolerant words from Namibian President Sam Nujoma. Over the last few years, Nujoma has called for not only the arrest and imprisonment of gays, but even the elimination of homosexuality in Namibia. But when questioned on the subject by Deutsche Presseagentur, Nujoma said, "Well, certainly that is not in our culture. You can keep your culture and I keep mine. I think human relationships must be promoted to respecting each other's culture and way of life. We get along."
And finally, a couple of very distinguished gay men are turning up in surprising contexts. First, it was Australian High Court Justice Michael Kirby, whose entry is by far the most extensive in Australia's Who's Who, appearing on the annual 25 Most Beautiful People list issued last month by Who Weekly magazine. The magazine did clarify that among the list's usual pretty faces, it likes to include a leavening of those with inner beauty, and wanted to honor Kirby's grace under fire in the face of a conservative's recent smear campaign. But now it's Canada's first openly gay member of parliament, Sven Robinson, appearing online, clad only in seashells and shedding those for money. But it's in a good cause. Robinson is a committed environmentalist and enthusiastic hiker, so it was natural that he'd join a campaign to protect Vancouver Island. The Georgia Strait Alliance is conducting the campaign called Hunks for Habitat. And at www.hunksforhabitat.com, you can view Svend, among others, and strip him of his seashells at the rate of $50 Canadian donation per shell. And for the outspoken, media-loving Robinson, it may be the first time he ever needed any help to come out of his shell.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 15th, 2002. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
Pride, pride, gotta have pride. We've been around too long to keep it inside. Pride, can't sit back and watch from the side. Pride is power, and power is pride. It's time to celebrate all the colors of the rainbow. Get out into the streets, follow the tide. Pride.
Once upon a time, not so long ago, it was against the law in most places to serve alcohol to homosexuals and illegal for members of the same gender to dance together. Still, with the June Pride Month tradition upon us, many people, especially the up-and-coming-out younger generation, know little about the pivotal event in the contemporary queer movement that changed everything. It's an annual question of pride. What's a Stonewall, and who was Christopher Street?
And festivals celebrating gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender pride are now held in cities all over the world practically all year round, but the tradition was born in June. Unfortunately, it's not surprising to discover that many people, even those who come out to enjoy the celebrations, don't know what event they're commemorating.
Do you know what the Stonewall riots were about?
I'm not real clear, I'll be honest with you. I never have read about it, what exactly happened there, and the purpose of it.
I've never heard anything about it. No, I don't know nothing about it.
So just what is this party all about? The significance of June 27th, 1969 must be seen against the backdrop of life before that. A poem by Judy Gron from the classic Lesbian Concentrate album gives you some idea.
A history of lesbianism. How they came into the world. The women-loving women came in 3x3 and 4x4. The women-loving women came in 10x10 and 10x10 again until there were more than you could count. How they lived in the world, the women-loving women learned as much as they were allowed and walked and wore their clothes the way they liked whenever they could. They did whatever they knew to be happy or free and worked and worked and worked. The women-loving women in America were called dykes, and some liked it, and some did not. They made love to each other the best they knew how, and for the best reasons. How they went out of the world, the women-loving women went out one by one, having withstood greater and lesser trials and much hatred from other people. They went out one by one, each having tried in her own way to overthrow the rule of men over women. They tried it one by one and hundred by hundred until each came in her own way to the end of her life and died. The subject of lesbianism is very ordinary. It's the question of male domination that makes everybody angry.
By the late 1960s, the anger of lesbians and gays was straining the locks on the closet doors, but something still held them back. This discussion was recorded at Pacifica Radio New York just 6 months before the historic event.
This is the New Symposium, a program from and for the homosexual community. I'm Baird Searles, and also on hand,
Kermit Lamb. I have felt, and I think I've changed even my thinking on this in the last 3 or 4 years, is that homosexuals aren't proud enough to be homosexuals and get out and you know, be militant a little bit and say I am, and a little like I'm glad to see now in the racial thing that Negroes now aren't just trying to get along like everybody else. They've seen beauty in their own blackness.
Yeah.
Black is beautiful.
It bears on what you're saying about being proud of homosexual, which I think even at now is a little much to ask of most people, but just being open about it. Since doing this program, and kind of because of doing this program and trying to find people to do this program back at the beginning, it has come so sharply to my attention the total lack of courage that the homosexual community has. And I know the reasons, damn it, and I've been through it myself. I think that is one thing you can really pin on all of you out there is cowardice. I know I'm going to get letters saying, okay, it's easy for you. You're not going to get fired from the station. But it hasn't been that easy. The feeling that I've totally lost contact with my father because of this program. Mm. And I know that people's lives can be ruined if they open up and reveal themselves. On an idealistic plane, we all know that if every homosexual said what he was tomorrow, that the whole situation would be changed for the better. Now, this is obviously a pipe dream. But for every homosexual that does open up and reveal himself, there are that many more people that realize that homosexuals are real, breathing human beings. They are not sex maniacs or freaks. That many more young people that are given the fact that a homosexual life needn't be a disaster.
I know a number of people who are under 25, say, under 20. They all seem to be much more relaxed. I hope it's a sign.
I don't know. So do I.
There's a certain feeling among many younger people of not caring who knows. They have straight friends who know, and I hope this is sort of indicative of something.
June 27th, 1969, as recalled in Brett Artery's 1970 documentary.
The disorders began with a routine police raid on a homosexual bar, the Stonewall, on Christopher Street. Almost every homosexual who was in New York at the time of the Stonewall Rebellion has his own private memory of what took place. One of the longtime leaders of the gay rights movement, Craig Rodwell, remembers it this way.
The first night was Friday. I was on the way home from a friend's house. The raid was just starting at that time, and we noticed the crowd. We went over there, and a crowd was gathering out in front. There was a paddy wagon pulled up and a few people being taken out. It started with a few coins and pebbles being thrown at the police, and then the police retreated into the Stonewall. And then after the police barricaded themselves inside, it was like half an hour later, the riot police started moving up Christopher, breaking up the crowd, which had really become a very angry crowd with hundreds of bottles and rocks. There wasn't one window left in the whole place after about 10 minutes. And they broke the crowd up into small groups, and this went on for like 2 or 3 hours, back and forth in the whole area. I think they thought the people would just go home or run, especially since they were gay people. They're not used to gay people standing up at all, especially in front of police. But they would chase people away, and they would go around the block and come in another way. And this sort of tug of war went on all evening. And then on Saturday night, it was much the same thing. Starting about 9, crowds started to gather in the area. And then around 11 or 12, they started taking over the street, stopping cars from coming through, unless there were gay people in them. A few fires were set. But generally, there's an angry mood, a lot of chanting, a lot of hand-holding, a lot of assertion of being gay. It was a way of saying we're tired of hiding, tired of leading two lives, tired of denying our basic identity, denying ourselves. Newfound pride, really, a collective pride in their identity.
Another important outgrowth of the riots was the formation of numerous action-oriented homosexual groups in New York and around the country. They're composed for the most part of younger and more militant homosexuals.
It still is a relatively small minority of gay people who do reflect this new spirit, whatever you want to call it. I think it's going to infect the masses of gay people in the coming years.
Guy power is here to stay, and nobody, nobody is going to ignore us any longer.
Hey Joe, get up and go, wouldn't like to tell you twice. Hey Mac, get off my back, didn't ask your advice. There's too much heat out in the street, telling us to move along. Gonna be a long, hot summer.
This is Gabrielle Antolovich reporting from West Hollywood for This Way Out. Do you know what the Stonewall Riots were about?
I know a little bit about them.
What do you know?
Well, supposedly some cops came into a bar, and some Long Beach cops and New York. Okay. Well, anyway, whatever city. But anyway, they came into the bar and they were trying to break up the gays or whatever. And then the gays kicked their butt. That's what I heard.
I just heard like a whole bunch of drag queens just sort of like, you know, barricaded the whole half of the city and just you know, took over for about a few days.
You know that it wasn't just drag queens. It was leather boys and lesbians and people of color, too.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about the Stonewall riots?
I don't know a thing about them.
Well, what's the gay parade about?
I guess to celebrate the gay life. Where you can touch in public and it doesn't, I guess, offend anybody, or you can just be yourself.
You know that it's a yearly event to commemorate the Stonewall riots that happened in New York.
No! Did you know that?
No, I knew it was Stonewall, but I didn't know why they called it that.
Maybe I don't know enough about my culture.
Are you ready for a story?
Yeah, yeah!
A story of our past.
At last!
A story of faggots. A
story of dykes.
A story of many incredible fights.
Story of good.
Story of bad.
Story that made us fightin' mad.
His story.
Her story.
Our story.
Gay story. History.
Gay history rap.
Surprise at the Stonewall Inn.
Gay history rap.
Now the Stonewall Inn was a sleazy place. It was hard to get in if they didn't know your face. Reason for this was mighty clear. It was against the law to run a bar for queers. Prices inside were more than double. We paid them cause we didn't want trouble. But something strange was a brewing inside. Faggots and dykes feeling something like pride. Stage was set, people in place for the cops and the queers to meet face to face.
Gay history.
Started gathering, seeing the scene, shouted support to those three queens. Through the door came another queer, stocky little woman who knew no fear. Screaming, punching, kicking pigs, crowd gave a yell because she wasn't too big. Running and hiding was a thing of the past when this tough dyke started kicking ass.
Gay history rap.
Heavens were flaring and the real fun began when the crowd decided to give her a hand.
Nickels and quarters and bottles flew down on the heads of the cops and all around.
The cops ran and hid in the very bar they were supposed to live.
The parking meter smashed against the door. Then a fire started spreading across the floor.
Three days later, peace was restored.
The hinges were sprung on the closet doors.
Gay history rap.
Now that the nation has swung to the right and more people have seen the light. Murders and muggings and a lot more fights. Sex and discos instead of rights. History rap.
Murders and muggings and a lot more fights.
Maybe I don't know enough about my culture.
Sex and discos instead of rights.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambage, Rex Walkner, and Brian Nunes contributed program material. Thanks also to the late Jim Kepner and to the Pacifica Radio Archives. John Gilbert Levitt, the Berkeley Women's Music Collective, the Tom Robinson Band, and Age of Consent performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. And if you've been frustrated lately, try again. The gremlins are gone, so click it out. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help in This Way Out's critical struggle to stay on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening with pride on Trance 104.7 FM, Broward County, Florida, KRZA, Alamosa, Colorado, CITR, Vancouver, British Columbia, and on Global Shortwave, online, and more than 125 other local stations around the world, including your community radio station. Everybody's gonna stay tuned.